which means the Sampradaya coming from Ramanuja Acharya, in which there are the proponents of Malakata Nyai, or monkey logic, and there are the followers of Majara Nyai, which means cat logic. I'll explain that. So the followers of Majara Nyai say that the devotee, he should simply be like a kitten. Just as the kitten doesn't make any endeavor, but simply the mother comes and picks up the kitten by the back of the neck and takes him away here and there. Have you seen sometimes the cat picks up the kitten by the back of its neck and takes it here and there? You familiar with that? Yeah, okay. So they say this would be the position of the devotee. His relationship with God is established, and he just leaves everything else up to God. He doesn't make any endeavor of his own. So they say that you simply have to surrender once to the Lord, and he will look after you. This is based on a statement of Lord Ram in the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. This verse was, anyone tell me this verse. He said that, Sakradeva prapanno yastavasmi ticha yachate, abhayam sarvata tasmai dadamye tangvatam mana. He said that if anyone even once surrenders to me, I award him fearlessness forever. This is my Brahma. This was spoken by Lord Ram when Vibhishana came to surrender to him. Lord Ram was on the shores of Bharat or India, preparing to cross over to Lanka, when Vibhishana, the brother of Ravana, came and said, I'm coming to join you. So the members of Rama's army, which mostly consisted of monkeys and bears, they were very suspicious of Vibhishana. They said, how can you trust him? He's come from the enemy side. And they wanted to, some were even recommending to kill him on the spot. But Ram disagreed. And he spoke this verse, if anyone once surrenders to me, I award them fearlessness. You should join our party and be given full trust. However, there is another sect in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya who say that, no, you have to earn the mercy of the Lord. You have to follow the path of bhakti yoga, by which you can gradually become purified. And then by such purification, your surrender will be fully meaningful. So this group, they give the example of the monkey, baby monkey, who the mother certainly looks after, but the baby, who's seen the monkeys with the baby monkey? Mm-hmm. Those who've been to India, or on the TV, right, in the zoo? In the zoo. So the mother runs along on her two hands and two legs, and the baby is hanging on underneath like this. So the mother is looking, is certainly taking care of the baby, but the baby has to make his own effort also. So on this point of philosophy, the whole Sri Sampradaya is split in two, and two different, Vadagalai and Tanagalai, they have different tilak and different procedures of worship, and so of course they have other differences also. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said that, well, our understanding is a little different to both of them. He said our understanding, it's like someone is fallen in a well, and then someone has to throw him a rope, and then he grabs the rope, which is like the mercy of the Lord coming down through the disciplic succession. But holding onto the rope, he has to make his effort to come up out of the well. And then when he comes out of the well, then he doesn't hold on, but he can move freely. So it's closer to the Malakata Nyai, the logic of the monkey. But there are some subtle differences also, especially that point that his relationship, in the beginning, there's a great distance between the savior and the saved. But once he's saved and out of the well, he can move as freely as the person who saved him. So this has many subtle philosophical implications, which I won't go into here. But we understand that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he was constantly speaking about philosophy. Our own Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was also constantly speaking philosophy and constantly speaking from Shastra. It is the duty of an acharya to instill in his disciples a philosophical understanding from Shastra. And especially at that time, not so much India now, but in those days, I mean, traditionally India was a land of philosophical discussion. Philosophy was considered central to life. It was considered far more important. Just like nowadays, you see people read the newspapers and they worry about the elections in America and politics and this and that. Or they take a lot of interest in who's going to get more medals in the Olympic Games or who's going to win the World Cup soccer. It's considered it's a very important part of modern culture. Even now in Britain, in at least in one university, they offer degrees in football studies. You know how to play football, but they just study it as a subject. It's sociological impact and something, I don't know. Because it's an important part of life in most of the world, in much of the developed world. People earn literally millions of dollars for their ability to kick a ball around. They become national heroes if they're a good footballer. So, in the same way, previously in India, philosophy was considered important. And people in general, they were, of course, not everybody was a great philosopher, but people knew the stories and the philosophical implications, at least to some extent, of the Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Srimad Bhagavatam, especially. So if you want to preach and establish that Krishna is the Supreme Person of the Godhead, you have to be very astute in philosophy. Even nowadays in South India, sometimes you're just going on the street and someone stops you and recites a Sanskrit verse from the Upanishads and says, "What is your understanding of this?" So an acharya, especially in those days, that he was expected to be, he had to be vastly learned in Shastra and to be able to explain so many subtle intricacies of Shastra. You know, not only explain, but defeat the misconceptions of others. Now, as I was explaining yesterday, at that time, the intelligentsia in India, they were already by that time much steeped in Western ideas. So many of them more modern people, they weren't so much interested in hearing from Shastra. So and in fact they had many, they'd imbibed many Western blasphemous ideas of Shastric narrations. So to preach in this ethos, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also had to be very learned in Western ideas. And in fact, he was vastly learned. He was known as a walking encyclopedia. It said anyone could discuss with him on any topic, and he could discuss with him. As a young man, he never actually finished college. He dropped out early, which was practically unheard of in those days that anybody should do such a thing. His elder brother, Kamala Prasad, had previously been in the pay of the kings of Tripura. In the pay means he was paid money. Tripura at that time was a kingdom east of Bengal. It's now a small independent state east of Bengal. The kings of Tripura were traditionally, since the time of Narottam Das Thakur, Vaishnavs, and they were very wealthy and they were sponsors of Vaishnavs. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was given the job of educating the sons of the kings of Tripura. And later he, being posted in Calcutta, he exposed much corruption that was going on among the office bearers of the kings of Tripura. So, but after some time he left that because he wanted to pursue a fully spiritual life. But the kings of Tribhuvan, the kings means there was one and then he died and then the next one took over. So he was so satisfied with Bhaktisiddhanta's service that he did, even as a young man, he gave him a pension for life for the few years' service, which Saraswati Thakur accepted for some time and then he stopped it. So anyway, while he was at the college, he hardly studied the syllabus, but he most of the time studied in it. He was reading so many different books in the library. And also, when he was in the pay of the kings of Tripura, he also took advantage of their vast library and read so many books. And he was very intelligent. He was a Shutida, means he remembered whatever he read or heard. There's a photo of him as a young boy in which you can see even then his head is very large in relationship to the rest of his body, his big brain. As a young man, after finishing his so many secular studies, then he made a thorough study of the philosophies of India, the spiritual philosophies of India. He even studied Mayavad in great detail. He spent some time in Puri at the Govardhan Math, which is the eastern headquarters of the Shankaracharya Sampradaya. And he spent so much time with the Madhusudan Tirtha, who was the incumbent Shankaracharya, that he spent so much time with him that some people thought he was going to become a Mayavada. Mayavada means in office. It's like you'd say Putin is the incumbent Prime Minister of Russia. In this way, he had a... Of course, he read so many Gaudiya Vaishnava books also. From his childhood, he was trained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in assisting Bhaktivinoda in writing, proofreading, editing, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very interested in utilizing the printing press for publishing books about Krishna consciousness. So he trained his young son, Vimala Prasad, in all these activities. So much so that Vimala, he even knew how to work the machine, and even if it went wrong, he knew how to repair it. He used to say, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that, "My father trained me in proofreading, but I don't only proofread essays." He said, "I proofread people also. I proofread religions. I proofread the whole world. If there's any mistake, I find it out and correct it." He said, "I appeared in the Karkata Lagna," which means the sign of the crab. Astrological sign of the crab. Yeah. So he said, "If there's anything wrong, I'll catch it in my pincers." So like this, he's very excruciating in philosophy, very fine and getting into the fine details, almost to the point of painfulness. And he gave many original viewpoints on Shastric understanding. He would often speak for 2 hours or 3 hours at a time. And those who heard him, they said that they always heard so many new ideas coming, so many different realizations coming all the time. The devotees who heard him, they said that we heard him for so many years, and that every time we hear so many wonderful things. However, his manner of speaking, that means the language he used, was often very difficult. Whether he spoke in English or generally he spoke in Bengali. But his style of Bengali was quite unusual. No one ever spoke or wrote like that before. It was very tough, Sanskritized language. And practically, not just terminology, but it's difficult to explain. But in Sanskrit there are many words. You can join together several words in one word. And I mean, normally that wouldn't be used in Bengali, but you would use such things right in Bengali. Sometimes you'll see in his writing, like one whole line, one word takes up practically one line. So unless someone had some understanding of Sanskrit and philosophy, it would be very difficult for them to understand him, because he would use technical philosophical terms. So actually it's very difficult for most people to understand him, unless they were highly educated. Even Prabhupada himself, he said, when I heard Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I didn't understand what he was saying, but I went on listening anyway. Of course, we know that Prabhupada certainly understood what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, because he also said that because I was a good listener, therefore I am now a good speaker. Because I heard nicely, I can now preach nicely. But on the other hand, Prabhupada is making the point that his style of speaking is very difficult to understand. So after his lectures, often the devotees, they would go to some of his senior devotees and say, what did he say? They listen to the whole lecture, and afterwards they have to ask, what did he say? Some of the novel philosophical insights he gave, or explanations he gave, are as follows. Yeah. New and interesting. One, he gave the explanation why Nityananda Prabhu broke Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas danda, sannyas rod. That is described in Chaitanya Bhagavad, especially in detail, that when shortly after taking sannyas, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling from Bengal to Puri, he handed Nityananda Prabhu his sannyas rod and said, here, look after this, I'm going to bathe in the river. So Nityananda looked at it, and he broke it, and broke it into three pieces and threw it in the river. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to take a bath, Nityananda Prabhu broke it into three pieces and threw it in the river. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later asked for it, he said, where's my Dhamma? Where's my Dhamma? So Nityananda said, well, when you were in ecstasy, you fell on it and broke it, so I threw it away. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't believe him, and he was very angry. Broke my sannyas rod, how could you do that? It's unthinkable. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very angry, and he said, okay, I'm leaving you guys. I'm going ahead of you to Puri. You can come behind if you'd like. I'm not staying with you, you're a bunch of fellas. So no acharyas had attempted to give any explanation of this until Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did so. In which he said, one thing is that Nityananda, he didn't like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having an ekadanda, or the single sannyas rod of a mayadanda, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as his pastime, accepted sannyas from Keshav Bharati, who was officially a mayavadi. So Nityananda Prabhu broke it into three and made it a two-danda for like a Vaishnava. And then he threw it away, because he thought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is more than any sannyasi. He is the goal of life of those who are in the Paramahamsa state, which is even above sannyas. So he thought it inappropriate that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had any danda at all, and therefore he threw it away. Another interesting insight about Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Radha Bhava Beshe Prabhu Hoyo Shrimurti Dure Nityananda Deki Karolena Stuti, in which is described that becoming absorbed in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually took her form. And seeing this, Nityananda Prabhu offered prayers from a distance. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes in his purport that Nityananda Prabhu, anadhikari, because he doesn't have the qualification to come close to Radharani, therefore he offered prayers from a distance. Because Balaram doesn't come close to Radharani. It's an esoteric topic of rasa-vichara, discussion, an esoteric topic of understanding of the intimate exchanges between the various devotees of Krishna. how Balaram is Krishna, but he's also separate from Krishna, and somewhat different mood to Krishna. And Radharani is the internal potency of Krishna, and they're both extremely dear to Krishna. But as a matter of Leela, they cannot mix, because as the elder brother of Krishna, Balaram, his presence when Radha is there would be a disturbance to Krishna's enjoyment. So Radharani and Balaram respect each other, but they don't come into the association of each other, deliberately avoid each other. So on this basis, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described why that word is dure, why from a distance the Nityananda offered prayers to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the movement of Radharani. Another important understanding that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave was about the pastime of Yudhishthira's chariot coming down to the ground. That's described in Mahabharata, that Yudhishthira's chariot used to travel just slightly above the ground, because he was so pious that his chariot, and that was like some mystic siddhi given by the demigods, or that he was so pious that his chariot just would move above the ground. Now, before the battle of Kurukshetra began, Yudhishthira Maharaj, just before it began, he left his army and he walked to the other side and met the commanders of the Kaurava army. So everybody was wondering, what's he doing? Is he going to try and make a peace settlement at this hour? Is it possible? But Yudhishthira, being a most cultured king, he was going to his superiors to ask them for their blessing. Before you undertake any serious endeavor, you should seek the blessings of your gurus. So there were so many people there in the position of guru to him. Bhishma was in the position just like their grandfather. Shaurya was like their father-in-law. Drona actually was their guru in the sense that he taught them to fight. And Dronacharya's son, Ashvatthama, although he was about the same age as the Pandavas, he was also like a guru in as much as he was a Brahmana by caste, and they were Kshatriyas. So he went to them all and asked for blessings. And one by one he asked them for blessings, and then he asked them, please tell me how we can kill you. You should ask your guru if you have anything difficult to do. So they'd come to fight against their gurus, so they were asking their gurus, how can we kill you? So Drona said, yes, I offer you full blessings. And he said, but I can only be killed only if my son Ashvatthama is killed. Only then, out of disappointment, will I be able to be killed. So he went to Ashvatthama and asked for blessings, which Ashvatthama not so happily did. And he asked, well, how can you be killed? Ashvatthama said, you can't kill me. So at the end of this battle, I'm still going to be alive. Which is true, he's still alive. He's up in the Himalayas. So anyway, during the battle, after Bhishma fell, he didn't die, but he fell, and he wasn't able to fight anymore, then the next commander-in-chief of the Kauravas became Dronacharya. And Duryodhana got him really in the mood for fighting. Yeah, he goaded him into fighting. He got him to fight him. He said, I know you, Drona. You actually want the Pandavas to win. And like this, he insulted him so much. So Drona went out and he was like fire, and he was killing the Pandavas soldiers, thousands and thousands. And it seemed like in one day he was going to just completely finish off the whole Pandava army. So Krishna was thinking, what to do? The only way we can kill Drona is if out of disappointment he hears that Ashvatthama has been killed. And if he hears that Ashvatthama has been killed, then out of disappointment he'll lose his enthusiasm to fight, and then he can be killed. But we can't kill Ashvatthama, he's too. So Krishna devised a trick. He told Yudhishthira Maharaj, you should call out in the presence of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama is killed. Yudhishthira said, well, why don't you say it, Krishna? I don't like to tell lies. I never told a lie in my life. Krishna said, I know. That's why I want you to say it. Because if anyone else says it, Drona won't believe him. The only person he will believe is you. He has full faith that you will never tell a lie. Yudhishthira said, no, I can't. I never told a lie in my life. Krishna said, you know, we're in the middle of a war here, you know. You have to do it. And still Yudhishthira was reluctant. So Krishna said, hey, look, I'll tell you what we'll do. You see, in our army, we have an elephant called Ashvatthama. So we'll kill it. And you will call out, Ashvatthama, the elephant, is dead. And when you say the elephant, I will blow on my conch so no one can hear it. So Yudhishthira said, okay. So, Ashvatthama hata iti gajja. So he called out. And in the meantime, Drona heard, he became totally disappointed. And then Dhrishtadyumna, who had been born for the sake of killing him, killed him. But after this, Yudhishthira's chariot came boom down in the mud because he told him that. His spotless character had been spoiled. That's what the Kami commentators say. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the reason it came down was because he hesitated. He didn't want to follow the order of Krishna. Therefore, he lost his purity. Another story from the Mahabharata concerns the time when the Pandavas were young boys and they were studying fighting from use of weapons from Dronacharya, in which Arjuna, he was the star student of Dronacharya. His one name is Savyasachi. Do you know what that means? Comes in Bhagavad Gita. Tamatram Bhavasavyasachi. Does anyone remember? Prabhupada gives him he gives the explanation. Yeah, actually Prabhupada says he's expert in shooting arrows, but it actually means that one who can shoot arrows with either hand. So one day Krishna and Arjuna they went hunting in the forest. They were young boys. And they went hunting with dogs. And then they saw that what happened, they were going hunting and the quarry, the animal that they were chasing, someone else shot. Quarry means the animal that is being hunted. Q-U-A-R-R-Y. The animal that's being hunted. A-double-R-Y. One is like an open mind, and the other is an animal that's being hunted.
No, just in general. Yeah. I see.
So Arjuna, well, you know, he was upset. You know, we were hunting this animal, and someone else shot it before us. So they send their dogs out to find, you know, who is this? And dogs were barking. And all of a sudden, the dogs, they got their mouths zipped up with arrows. And you have to be pretty expert in shooting arrows to do that. So, they found out who had shot the arrows. And it was a young boy from the hunter caste by the name of Ekalavya. So, they're very impressed with his archery skills, which are maybe better even than Arjuna's. So they asked, you know, where did you learn all this? Where did you learn this expertise in archery? He said, well, I learned it from my guru. He said, who's your guru? He said, Dronacharya. Arjuna said, well, I'm a disciple of Dronacharya. I never saw you being taught by him. So he said, well, actually, I approached Dronacharya to teach me, but he refused because I'm a hunter, I'm a low caste. So I just made a murti of Dronacharya in the forest here, and I worship him, and as a result of that worship, this knowledge has come to me. So they went and reported this back to Dronacharya. And Arjuna said that, well, he should give you some, he said to Dronacharya that he should give you some Guru Dakshina. So Dronacharya said, well, what shall we ask him to give? And Arjuna said, we should ask him for his thumbs. And obviously, if your thumbs are cut off, then you can't shoot arrows anymore. So they went back, and Arjuna took his thumbs to Dronacharya. He went back to Ekalavya and he took his thumbs to Dronacharya. Now, this is, again, generally understood by the Karmis that Arjuna was envious of Ekalavya. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explained differently, that Arjuna wanted to punish him being a fraud. The Karmis explained that Ekalavya was a great guru bhakta, but Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explained actually he was more like a thief. He took the knowledge from Dronacharya without his permission and actually against his sanction. So therefore Arjuna had him punished in this way. So in this way Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave many wonderful philosophical insights. So many wonderful topics he's discussed. Yes, I said yesterday I'd leave some time for questions, so and we have to finish right on time today because there's another seminar beginning at 12:10. I still didn't really tell hardly any anecdotes about this Dhanasaraswara Thakur. I'm just kind of taking up all the time with the introduction. And Acharya is like a great ocean. So there's so much to be said. Okay, well tomorrow I'll tell some anecdotes, then just some short incidents to demonstrate the personality of the Acharya. I'd also like to speak about some of his leading disciples, or leading and other disciples. There's so many things to be told. But right now I'll take question.
You mentioned yesterday you were speaking that in preaching Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati differed from his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Don't go, we have prasad. Some prasad there? Okay.
That's his approach and preaching was different. But also you mentioned that like the father, like the son, mentioning Saraswati Thakur, meaning Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also a father of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So how should we understand? And also, what should be our... Why is it so? Was it just... due to circumstances, the different circumstances, or was it completely different approach to preaching on the part of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati? And what should be our preaching also?
You want to say it again in Russian?
No,
did everyone hear the question? Well, let me say, like father, like son, it doesn't mean that they're, they have this new genetic thing. What do they call it? It might be a clone. It doesn't mean it's a clone. Just like you see among the disciples of Prabhupada, you can see that they all have distinct personalities, even though they're all in various ways representing Prabhupada. I was pointing out when I said Prabhupada was like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, I was pointing out some similarities. But there are significant differences in approach also of Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. For instance, it appears that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur deliberately wrote and spoke in a very complex intellectual manner. One reason being for that he wanted to establish that Gaudiya Vaishnavism is not just for uneducated and low-class people. Whereas Prabhupada, part of Prabhupada's brilliance was that he was able to put the same very complex and abstruse philosophical ideas in very simple language, which was required for preaching in an absolutely new field where people had no idea of this philosophy. So yes, different acharyas present the same philosophy in different ways according to the time, place, and circumstance. And they also have their own personalities. I'd like to answer that question you could write a whole book on this, about apparent differences between Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And some people even today claim that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur actually was so different from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he deviated from him. He didn't properly present Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So it is, there's a simmering controversy on these subjects. which doesn't very much affect our preaching in the modern world, because we're saved by the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, which has come through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. It doesn't really affect that much in India either, because it's only a very few people with these silly arguments. But at the time, it was quite a big issue. And there were books written against Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And there was one booklet written in reply by one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples on this point. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself wrote an essay in English called Thakur Bhaktivinoda, in which he stated that actually Thakur Bhaktivinoda, there are many people who have read his works and studied and can even quote them line by line, but who don't understand them at all. And he had many people who were physically closer to him for many years, but who didn't understand them at all. He said that actually, if you want to understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you have to understand through the Acharya, meaning himself, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So there are many, many controversial punks. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is a very controversial figure. He was a fighter. He spoke out against all kinds of rascalism and nonsense. And for that he was known as Lion Guru. And there appears to have been at least two attempts on his life. So as I said,